I faintly make out tall metal structures that look like lampposts, spaced every 100 yards or so in a straight line. That line is about the same distance from the edge of what appears to be forested woodland as it is from us. Patrolling in between the lampposts are packs of sentries, 5 and 6 strong.
No bloody way are we getting around that, mate.
Rembrandt tucks his hands into his trench coat as he scans left to right.
Looks to go on for miles.
So, how do we get past? Gilly asks.
That should be your job, mage, Maxis says with a hint of disdain. But you're probably too low level to be any use. I feel like socking him one for that, but I get a PM from Gilly that almost makes me laugh instead.
Gilly.
Jeez, your brother.
You sure he's worth saving?
I suppress my laugh with a grin. The last thing I need is Mike going all crazy on me again.
Is there some way to disable them?
Belle Helena asks.
Not without alerting everything, Maxis says.
Wait a minute, I say, and recall one of the scrolls I bought earlier. I think I have a spell that could help. I check and find the spell named Shadow Wall.
Shadow Wall, use your power over shadows to create an illusion that masks your party's presence.
Cast time, 10 seconds. Duration, 1 minute. Recast, 2 minutes. Cost, 10 TP. I cast it, and dust rises up from the desert floor to surround us until we each disappear from view.
Nice one, mate! Your brother's got tricks, Max!
With that, Rembrandt runs ahead, his form an undulating piece of glass as he moves.
I'm scouting!
We trail after him down the slope of the dune and stop when he pauses, waiting for a group of dogs to pass.
This only lasts a minute, I say through the party chat.
Got it.
We move on and pass beneath one of the lampposts. Thankfully, nothing happens.
30 seconds, I warn when I note we've still got a good 100 yards before we reach the forested area.
Rembrandt halts as a sentry wolf about 50 feet away stops and perks its ears.
Oh, crap. Hey, numbnuts, Maxis says in party chat. Was that spell sneak and invis or just invis?
Dang, I really hate my brother sometimes.
I'm not sure?
Aw, to hell with it, Maxis says.
Run!
We all take off. The wolves bark and growl in our direction and start to give chase. My heart hits my throat as we bolt for the tree line, and I grab Gilly's hand to make sure she keeps up with me. The spell wears off about 30 feet from the edge, and the watchtowers sound the alarm with a klaxon wail and red lights as we phase into existence with a flash of dust.
Keep going!
Maxis yells.
Don't look back!
I have the pressing urge to do just that as a savage growl sounds. It sounds like it's coming from right behind my head. We cross onto lush grass, and behind me, I hear a series of yelps and thuds. I look over my shoulder then, just in time to see one of the wolves run straight into a barrier of some kind. A honeycomb latticework becomes momentarily visible as it impacts. The beasts yelp and growl a bit more. Some even shake off a momentary daze from running into the invisible wall. But soon enough, they lose interest in us and return to patrolling between the watchtowers.
Jeez, that was close, I say,
my heart still pounding. I look to Gilly.
You all right?
She nods, winded, her hands resting on her knees, but otherwise she seems fine.
Close one, thanks to you, Maxis
says, already heading deeper into the tree line.
Check things out more carefully next time.
And come on, you've got some explaining to do. I mutter a cuss under my breath as we follow Maxis deeper into the woodland. The air is cool here, and I notice that the sky is not actually as dark as it was in the desert. While it's not broad daylight, the sun is at least visible in the sky. It looks like it's about to set in a few hours. Birds sing as they fly from tree to tree, and tiny insects buzz in my ears.
What type of world is this?
Val Helena says, looking up at the pine trees that tower over us 100 feet in the air.
Fantasy, probably, Maxis says. Don't know if it's Nazgar-based, but close enough. Brilliant,
Rembrandt says sardonically.
Means I'm piss out of luck for upgrades, then.
We'll get you some, Maxis says. Even if it means hiking back through the wild to find a tech world. We're both going to need to upgrade to pull this one off.
Pull what off? I ask.
Maxis fumes as he looks back at me.
I'm asking the questions first.
We travel a bit further, and I hear the burble of running water as we approach a stream that runs through the forest. The water cascades over moss-covered rocks and flows back the way we came, toward the desert. As soon as I see the crystal-clear water, I experience something I never have in-game before. I'm thirsty. And apparently I'm not the only one. Both Maxis and Rembrandt cupped their hands to the flowing stream for a drink. Gilly and I follow suit, as well as Val Helena. The water is cool and refreshing, and tastes better than anything I've ever drank before. Maxis points to a large granite rock at the edge of the stream.
Sit, and start talking. Tell me how you got here.
Before I can say anything, Val Helena jumps in.
He's here because of me, she says. I gave him the money to fix his legs, and I forced him to fight the world boss and come with me afterward. If you want to be mad at anyone for him being here, it's me.
Maxis looks up at her with a grimace.
He's just a damn kid.
Her eyes soften.
I know. I'm sorry.
Hey, I'm not a kid, I protest.
And I have shadow copy. That's why she needs me.
Maxis runs his hands through his dark hair, which, in this world, is full at the top and braided on the sides instead of being shaved. Looking more closely at him, I realize he still pretty much looks the same as in real life. He even has his goatee hiding beneath his scarf.
I still can't believe this, Maxis says. You've been lying all this time? About this job of yours? About your legs? How long have you been playing the game? Me lying?
He had to be kidding.
What about you, man? I was thinking you're in some gang or something, and you're really Maxis? The top PvP-er on the shards? What's up with you always downing me out about playing my stupid game when you're a freaking pro at one? How can you be such a hypocrite? Because they are just stupid games, he snaps. All of them. They're nothing like here.
Gilly says.
Where is here, exactly?
Who are you, anyway? Maxis asks Gilly dismissively. She's my girlfriend, okay?
Maxis looks back at me like that's even more impossible than seeing me in the game.
Well, I'll be.
What? Gilly says. Is that so hard to believe?
Maxis scoffs.
If you knew him like I do, yeah.
You really are a jerk, you know that?
His brows rise above his shades at Gilly's retort.
You've got moxie, I'll give you that.
But this is a family matter, so please stay out of it.
I'm not staying out of anything, Gilly snaps. I'm here just like you, and I want answers. What is this place?
I want the answer to that one myself. Mike said he was going to the surface, but it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I want answers too.
I look to Val Helena as well.
From both of you. Where are we? Is this even still in the game?
Val Helena defers to Maxis.
He might be able to answer that better than me.
I look back to my brother.
Well?
He pauses for a long moment, as if trying to gather his thoughts. Finally, he looks at me and says,
Yes and no.
Yes and no?
What the heck does that mean? It means that yes, this is the real world, Ryan. But it's changed. It's not what you think it is. It's different than what you learned about in your education feeds.
I'm not understanding any of this.
Huh?
He sits down on the rock and lets out a sigh.
It hasn't been 200 years since a nuclear war. No one knows how long it's really been. It could be thousands of years.
My stomach lurches.
What are you saying?
Gilly says, her face growing pale.
I'm saying that this is the surface. This is what the world looks like now.
I feel a bit dizzy.
What? That's as much as I've been taught anyway, Maxis says. About the truth we still have of our history. In the game, when you transfer to the surface, they call this place Citadel. But in actuality, the place we live, our city, that's its true name. Citadel.
Is it really underground?
Gilly asks.
What about the radiation? I ask. Does it still exist? Isn't that how Mom got sick? Yes, it's underground. Yes, there is still radiation above us. And yes, that's how Mom got sick.
Then how are we not dead? How is all of this not dead?
I say, looking about at the trees and wildlife around us.
How are we even here? As our game characters? In the real world?
There's no radiation because we're not in the same location as Citadel, Maxis says. When you transfer to the surface, you're placed randomly.
What?
Gilly says.
Why?
So Citadel's true location won't be discovered. By who? I ask. The machines, he says. The builders. A chill runs down my spine. Crap, I nearly forgot about them. He's supposed to go and fight one or something.
What exactly are they? Did they really make the city? Why are we hiding from them?
Okay, look, stop with the questions, Maxis says. Just let me speak. He takes a deep breath, and we both shut up to listen. As far as we know, yes. The builders originally made the Citadel. They also made all of this. He waves his hands at our surroundings. We think they were created to restore the Earth after the war or something, but we're not sure. The only thing we do know is that we've lost control over them. They're sentient AIs now, and in worlds like this, they become like gods. As for how they're connected to the game, that's another mystery. Some people think we tried to use the game as a way to control them again, to make them build a world with rules where we could gain an advantage over them. Other people think the game is what made us lose control of them in the first place, and that the builders were somehow infected by it and are now replicating it mindlessly. Either way, these AIs are basically recreating the Earth into the worlds we know as crystal shards. My stomach does a little dip, and Gilly and I share a frightful glance. As for how you're here, you're not. Not really. At least not all of you. Your bodies are still back in Citadel, but your consciousness has been transferred to a nanotech body. Your flesh and blood, sorta. As much as the nanotech can replicate of that, anyway.
Are you saying this is a real body?
I say, thumping against my chest.
As real as it can be, copied from your character. Stats, abilities, and all.
Holy crap. I think back to when I saw Valhelena materializing. It all makes sense now. We weren't logging in. We were being printed, just like a nanoprocessor.
I think I'm going to pass out.
Which brings me back to why I'm so pissed at you for being here, Ryan. His countenance darkens with a scowl.
Have you got any idea what trouble you've caused? You were supposed to stay with Mom, man. That's the main reason I felt comfortable doing any of this. I knew that no matter what happened to me, you'd still be there for her. But now she's going to see them come for you. And who knows what that's going to do to her.
Come for me? What is he talking about? He shakes his head. Why do you think I stayed away from home so much? I didn't want Mom to know what I was doing.
What do you mean, come for me?
Your body, Valhelena says. They transfer your real body into stasis once you make the jump here. My blood freezes as I remember the person in the capsule during the meeting I followed Mike to. Was that me now? Is that what happens to you when you really go to the surface?
Is that going to happen to me, too?
Gilly asks, looking pale. Maxis nods.
Probably. Unless you're already plugged into stasis. That's becoming more and more common these days.
Gilly goes quiet, and I can only imagine what she must be thinking.
How come no one knows about any of this stuff? I say, almost angry. I've never heard of any of it before. None of it.
Because the world would fall apart if everyone knew the truth, Ryan. So they mask it, Maxis says. When it happens, people just think it's evictions, and the bodies are being taken to the vats. I suddenly have a grisly vision of my mother thinking I'm dead.
Who does all this?
The board, Maxis says. But only a select few know what's really going on. My skin grows cold again. I think back to Gilly's dad, and hope she doesn't mention who he is right now. If anyone knows what's going on, it would be him. How she's processing all of this, I don't even know. When they come for you, they blame some glitch in the system, and the whole family has to sign a waiver not to talk about it. Maxis shakes his head. Mom's going to be gutted, man.
Crap, you're such an idiot. Hey, I was just doing my best to save her, okay?
Hot anger lights inside my stomach.
Speaking of which, why haven't you done anything for her? If you're Maxis, then where's all your damn money? Don't you have millions by now?
I keep telling you, he says.
You don't know what money really is. Then what the heck is it?
I shout.
It's this,
Maxis says, and holds out his hand. Slowly, a sparkling gray sand fills his palm.
It's nano, Ryan. That's what real money is. Every credit is a nanite. Or it's supposed to be. It makes our food, our air, our water. Each person requires over 3,000 of them a day just to survive.
And our city has just about run out.
What?
Valhelena says. You want to know how much money I really have?
Maxis wishes to trade with you. Maxis offers you 20,126,743 credits.
What the heck? It's all make-believe money, Ryan, he says. We can't spend it. Not in the real world, anyway. Why do you think they keep pushing us to live in those damn games so much? And that buying anything in the real world is so expensive? It's cheaper. It avoids us spending the real money.
What?
With the shortage, every citizen has a hard limit now, and it's down to 700K. You've probably gone and blown most of yours on fixing your damn legs.
700K?
I remember that number now from that meeting. I also remember that weird warning I got about a spending limit.
So, you're saying that even if I had gotten the money, I wouldn't have been able to buy Mom's treatment?
No, he says. If it were possible, I'd have done it a long time ago. For Mom to get her treatment, 5 other people would eventually have to die. And no one's going to make that kind of call, even though they promised me they would this time. It's a complete lie, and it doesn't even matter anyway. All the credits in the world aren't going to save Mom.
The floor opens up beneath me as everything I've worked for comes undone. I've been chasing fool's gold all this time?
I look to Valhelena, anger building in my heart.
Val, did you know about this?
She shakes her head.
I had no idea, I swear. What does this all mean?
It means that if we don't bring more nano back to the city this run, it won't matter if we save our mother or not.
What?
I say. Because in 6 months, everyone in Citadel will be dead, including us.
You have been listening to Dodge Tank, Book 1 of Crystal Shards Online, produced by Greg Lawrence, Associate Producer Emily Durr. Text copyright 2017 by Rick Scott. Production copyright 2018 by Podium Publishing. All rights reserved. If you enjoyed this audiobook, find more just like it by visiting audfans.com, the premier audiobook discovery service that brings tailored recommendations direct to your email. That's audfans.com.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.